And where does it? Two alternatives. Either the Corellians have constructed them themselves, far-fetched, very, but the other possibility is that we are being afflicted with a case of treason.
You think so?
Mallow's voice was cold.
The secretary said calmly, There's nothing miraculous about the possibility. Since the Four Kingdoms accepted the Foundation Convention, we have had to deal with considerable groups of dissident populations in each nation. Each former kingdom has its pretenders and its former noblemen who can't very well pretend to love the Foundation. Some of them are becoming active, perhaps.
Mallow was a dull red.
I see. Is there anything you want to say to me? I'm a Smyrnian.
I know. You're a Smyrnian, born in Smyrna, one of the former Four Kingdoms. You're a Foundation man by education only. By birth, you're an outlander and a foreigner. No doubt your grandfather was a baron at the time of the wars with Anacreon and Loris, and no doubt your family estates were taken away when Seth Cermak redistributed the land.
No, by black space, no. My grandfather was a blood-poor son of a spacer who died heaving coal at starving wages before the Foundation. I owe nothing to the old regime. But I was born in Smyrna, and I'm not ashamed of either Smyrna or Smyrnians by the galaxy. Your sly little hints of treason aren't going to panic me into licking Foundation spittle, and now you can either give your orders or make your accusations, I don't care which.
My good master trader, I don't care an electron whether your grandfather was king of Smyrna or the greatest pauper on the planet. I recited that rigmarole about your birth and ancestry to show you that I'm not interested in them. Evidently, you missed the point. Let's go back now. You're a Smyrnian. You know the Outlanders. Also, you're a trader and one of the best. You've been to Corell, and you know the Corellians. That's where you've got to go.
Mallow breathed deeply.
As a spy?
Not at all. As a trader. But with your eyes open. If you can find out where the power is coming from, I might remind you, since you're a Smyrnian, that two of those lost trade ships had Smyrnian crews.
When do I start?
When will your ship be ready?
In 6 days.
Then that's when you start. You'll have all the details at the Admiralty.
Right.
The trader rose, shook hands roughly, and strode out. Sut waited, spreading his fingers gingerly and rubbing out the pressure, then shrugged his shoulders and stepped into the mayor's office.
The mayor deadened the visiplate and leaned back.
What do you make of it, Sut?
He could be a good actor, said Sut, and stared thoughtfully ahead.
2. It was evening of the same day, and in Jorain Sut's bachelor apartment on the 21st floor of the Harden building, Publius Manlio was sipping wine slowly. It was Publius Manlio, in whose slight, aging body were fulfilled two great offices of the Foundation. He was foreign secretary in the mayor's cabinet, and to all the altar sons, barring only the Foundation itself, he was, in addition, primate of the church, purveyor of the holy food, master of the temples, and so forth, almost indefinitely, in confusing but sonorous syllables. He was saying,
But he agreed to let you send out that traitor. It is a point.
But such a small one, said Sut. It gets us nothing immediately. The whole business is the crudest sort of stratagem, since we have no way of foreseeing it to the end. It is a mere paying out of rope on the chance that somewhere along the length of it will be a noose.
True, and this Mallow is a capable man. What if he is not an easy prey to dupery?
That is a chance that must be run. If there is treachery, it is the capable men that are implicated. If not, we need a capable man to detect the truth, and Mallow will be guarded.
Your glass is empty.
No thanks, I've had enough.
Sut filled his own glass and patiently endured the other's uneasy reverie. Of whatever the reverie consisted, it ended indecisively. The primate said suddenly, almost explosively,
Sut, what's on your mind?
I'll tell you, Manlio. His thin lips parted. We're in the middle of a Selden crisis.
Manlio stared and then said softly,
How do you know? Has Selden appeared in the time vault again?
That much, my friend, is not necessary. Look, reason it out. Since the Galactic Empire abandoned the periphery and threw us on our own, we have never had an opponent who possessed atomic power. Now, for the first time, we have one. That seems significant, even if it stood by itself. And it doesn't. For the first time in over 70 years, we are facing a major domestic political crisis. I should think the synchronization of the two crises, inner and outer, puts it beyond all doubt.
Manlio's eyes narrowed.
If that's all, it's not enough. There have been 2 Selden crises so far, and both times the Foundation was in danger of extermination. Nothing could be a third crisis till that danger returns.
Sut never showed impatience. That danger is coming. Any fool can tell a crisis when it arrives. The real service to the state is to detect it in embryo. Look, Manlio, we're proceeding along a planned history,
We know that Harry Seldon worked out the historical probabilities of the future. We know that someday we're to rebuild the Galactic Empire. We know that it will take 1,000 years or thereabouts, and we know that in that interval we will face certain definite crises. Now, the first crisis came 50 years after the establishment of the Foundation, and the second 30 years later than that. Almost 75 years have gone since. It's time, Manlio, it's time.
Manlio rubbed his nose uncertainly.
And you've made your plans to meet this crisis?
Sut nodded.
And I, continued Manlio, am to play a part in it?
Sut nodded again. Before we can meet the foreign threat of atomic power, we've got to put our own house in order. These traitors...
Ah, the primate stiffened, and his eyes grew sharp.
That's right, these traitors. They are useful, but they are too strong and too uncontrolled. They are outlanders, educated apart from religion. On the one hand, we put knowledge into their hands, and on the other, we remove our strongest hold upon them.
If we can prove treachery?
If we could, direct action would be simple and sufficient. But that doesn't signify in the least. Even if treason among them did not exist, they would form an uncertain element in our society. They wouldn't be bound to us by patriotism or common descent or even by religious awe. Under their secular leadership, the outer provinces, which, since Hardin's time, looked to us as the holy planet, might break away.
I see all that, but the cure...
The cure must come quickly, before the Seldon crisis becomes acute. If atomic weapons are without, and disaffection within, the odds might be too great.
Sut put down the empty glass he'd been fingering.
This is obviously your job.
Mine.
I can't do it. My office is appointive and has no legislative standing.
The mayor?
Impossible. His personality is entirely negative. He is energetic only in evading responsibility. But if an independent party arose that might endanger re-election, he might allow himself to be led.
But, Sut, I lack the aptitude for practical politics.
Leave that to me. Who knows, Manlio? Since Albert Hardin's time, the primacy and the mayorality have never been combined in a single person. But it might happen now, if your job were well done.
3. And at the other end of town, in homelier surroundings, Hober Mallow kept a second appointment. He had listened long. And now he said cautiously,
"Yes, I've heard of your campaigns to get direct trader representation in the council, but why me, Twer?"
Chaim Twer, who would remind you any time, asked or unasked, that he was in the first group of outlanders to receive a lay education at the Foundation, beamed.
"I know what I'm doing," he said. "Remember when I met you first last year?"
"At the traders' convention."
"Right. You ran that meeting. You had those red-necked oxen planted in their seats, then put them in your shirt pocket and walked off with them. And you're all right with the Foundation masses, too. You've got glamour, or at any rate solid adventure publicity, which is the same thing."
"Very good," said Mallow dryly. "But why now?"
"Because now's our chance. Do you know that the Secretary of Education has handed in his resignation? It's not out in the open yet, but it will be."
"How do you know?"
"That, never mind." He waved a disgusted hand. "It's so. The Actionist Party is splitting wide open, and we can murder it right now on a straight question of equal rights for traitors, or rather, democracy, pro and anti."
Mallow lounged back in his chair and stared at his thick fingers. "Uh-uh. Sorry, Twer. I'm leaving next week on business. You'll have to get someone else." Twer stared.
"Business? What kind of business?"
"Very super secret. AAA priority. All that, you know. Had a talk with the mayor's own secretary."
"Snake Sut?"
Chaim Twer grew excited.
"A trick. The son of a spacer is getting rid of you. Mallow..."
"Hold on." Mallow's hand fell on the other's bald fist. "Don't go into a blaze. If it's a trick, I'll be back someday for the reckoning. If it isn't, your snake, Sut, is playing into our hands. Listen, there's a Seldon crisis coming up." Mallow waited for a reaction, but it never came. Twer merely stared.
"What's a Seldon crisis?"
"Galaxy!" Mallow exploded angrily at the anticlimax. "What the blue blazes did you do when you went to school? What do you mean, anyway, by a fool question like that?" The elder man frowned.
"If you'll explain..."
There was a long pause. Then, "I'll explain." Mallow's eyebrows lowered, and he spoke slowly. "When the Galactic Empire began to die at the edges, and when the ends of the galaxy reverted to barbarism and dropped away, Harry Seldon and his band of psychologists planted a colony, the Foundation, out here in the middle of the mess, so that we could incubate art, science, and technology, and form the nucleus of the Second Empire."
"Oh, yes, yes."
"I'm not finished," said the trader coldly. "The future course of the Foundation was plotted according to the science of psychohistory,
then highly developed, and conditions arranged so as to bring about a series of crises that will force us most rapidly along the route to future empire. Each crisis, each Selden crisis, marks an epoch in our history. We're approaching one now, our third.
Of course, Twer shrugged. I should have remembered, but I've been out of school a long time, longer than you.
I suppose so. Forget it. What matters is that I'm being sent out into the middle of the development of this crisis. There's no telling what I'll have when I come back, and there is a council election every year. Twer looked up.
Are you on the track of anything?
No.
You have definite plans?
Not the faintest inkling of one.
Well,
nothing. Hardin once said, to succeed, planning alone is insufficient. One must improvise as well. I'll improvise. Twer shook his head uncertainly, and they stood looking at each other. Mallow said, quite suddenly, but quite matter-of-factly, I tell you what, how about coming with me?
Don't stare, man. You've been a traitor before you decided there was more excitement in politics,
or so I've heard.
Where are you going? Tell me that.
Toward the Wasalian Rift. I can't be more specific till we're out in space. What do you say?
Suppose Sut decides he wants me where he can see me.
Not likely. If he's anxious to get rid of me, why not of you as well? Besides which, no traitor would hit space if he couldn't pick his own crew. I take whom I please. There was a queer glint in the older man's eyes.
All right, I'll go.
He held out his hand.
It'll be my first trip in 3 years.
Mallow grasped and shook the other's hand. Good, all fired good. And now, I've got to round up the boys. You know where the Firestar docks, don't you? Then show up tomorrow. Goodbye. 4. Corel is that frequent phenomenon in history, the republic whose ruler has every attribute of the absolute monarch but the name. It therefore enjoyed the usual despotism unrestrained even by those two moderating influences in the legitimate monarchies, regal honor and court etiquette. Materially, its prosperity was low. The day of the Galactic Empire had departed with nothing but silent memorials and broken structures to testify to it. The day of the foundation had not yet come, and in the fierce determination of its ruler, the Commodore Asper Argo, with his strict regulation of the traders and his stricter prohibition of the missionaries, it was never coming. The spaceport itself was decrepit and decayed, and the crew of the Far Star were drearily aware of that. The moldering hangars made for a moldering atmosphere, and Chaim Twer itched and fretted over a game of solitaire. Obermallow said thoughtfully, "Good trading material here." He was staring quietly out the viewport. So far there was little else to be said about Corel. The trip here was uneventful. The squadron of Corellian ships that had shot out to intercept the Far Star had been tiny, limping relics of ancient glory, or battered, clumsy hulks. They had maintained their distance fearfully, and still maintained it, and for a week now, Mallow's requests for an audience with the local government had been unanswered. Mallow repeated, "Good trading here. You might call this virgin territory." Chaim Twer looked up impatiently and threw his cards aside.
"What the devil do you intend doing, Mallow? The crew's grumbling, the officers are worried, and I'm wondering..."
"Wondering? About what?"
"About the situation. And about you. What are we doing?"
"Waiting." The old traitor snorted and grew red. He growled,
"You're going it blind, Mallow. There's a guard around the field, and there are ships overhead. Suppose they're getting ready to blow us into a hole in the ground."
"They've had a week."
"Maybe they're waiting for reinforcements."
Twer's eyes were sharp and hard. Mallow sat down abruptly. "Yes, I've thought of that. You see, it poses a pretty problem. First, we got here without trouble. That may mean nothing, however, for only 3 ships out of better than 300 went a glimmer last year. The percentage is low. But that may mean also that the number of their ships equipped with atomic power is small, and that they dare not expose them needlessly until that number grows. But it could mean, on the other hand, that they haven't atomic power after all. Or maybe they have, and are keeping undercover for fear we know something. It's one thing, after all, to piratize blundering, light-armed merchant ships. It's another to fool around with an accredited envoy of the Foundation, when the mere fact of his presence may mean the Foundation is growing suspicious. Combine this..."
"Hold on, Mallow, hold on."
Twer raised his hands.
"You're just about drowning me with talk. What are you getting at? Never mind the in-betweens."
"You've got to have the in-betweens, or you won't understand, Twer. We're both waiting. They don't know what I'm doing here, and I don't know what they've got here. But I'm in the weaker position, because I'm one, and they're an entire world, maybe with atomic power. I can't afford to be the one to weaken. Sure, it's dangerous. Sure, there may be a hole in the ground waiting for us. But we knew that from the start. What else is there to do?"
"I don't..."
Who's that now?
Mallow looked up patiently and tuned the receiver. The visiplate glowed into the craggy face of the watch sergeant. Speak, sergeant. The sergeant said,
Pardon, sir. The men have given entry to a Foundation missionary.
A what? Mallow's face grew livid.
A missionary, sir. He's in need of hospitalization, sir.
There'll be more than one in need of that sergeant for this piece of work. Order the men to battle stations. Crew's lounge was almost empty. 5 minutes after the order, even the men on the off-shift were at their guns. It was speed that was the great virtue in the anarchic regions of the interstellar space of the periphery, and it was in speed above all that the crew of a master trader excelled. Mallow entered slowly and stared the missionary up and down and around. His eyes slid to Lieutenant Tinter, who shifted uneasily to one side, and to watch Sergeant Demon, whose blank face and stolid figure flanked the other. The master trader turned to Twer and paused thoughtfully. Well then, Twer, get the officers here quietly, except for the coordinators and the trajectorian. The men are to remain at stations till further orders. There was a 5-minute hiatus in which Mallow kicked open the doors to the lavatories, looked behind the bar, pulled the draperies across the thick windows. For half a minute he left the room altogether, and when he returned he was humming abstractedly. Men filed in. Twer followed, and closed the door silently. Mallow said quietly, First, who let this man in without orders from me? The watch sergeant stepped forward. Every eye shifted.
Pardon, sir. It was no definite person. It was a sort of mutual agreement. He was one of us, you might say, and these foreigners here—
Mallow cut him short. I sympathize with your feelings, sergeant, and understand them. These men, were they under your command?
Yes, sir.
When this is over, they're to be confined to individual quarters for a week. You yourself are relieved of all supervisory duties for a similar period. Understood? The sergeant's face never changed, but there was the slightest droop to his shoulders. He said crisply,
Yes, sir.
You may leave. Get to your gun station. The door closed behind him, and the babble rose. Twer broke in,
Why the punishment, Mallow? You know that these Corellians kill captured missionaries.
An action against my orders is bad in itself, whatever other reasons there may be in its favor. No one was to leave or enter the ship without permission. Lieutenant Tinter murmured rebelliously,
7 days without action? You can't maintain discipline that way.
Mallow said icily, I can. There's no merit in discipline under ideal circumstances. I'll have it in the face of death, or it's useless. Where's this missionary? Get him here in front of me. The trader sat down, while the scarlet-cloaked figure was carefully brought forward. What's your name, Reverend?
Eh?
The scarlet-robed figure wheeled towards Mallow, the whole body turning as a unit. His eyes were blankly open, and there was a bruise on one temple. He had not spoken, nor, as far as Mallow could tell, moved during all the previous interval. Your name, revered one? The missionary started to sudden feverish life. His arms went out in an embracing gesture.
My son, my children, may you always be in the protecting arms of the galactic spirit.
Twer stepped forward, eyes troubled, voice husky.
The man's sick. Take him to bed, somebody. Order him to bed, Mallow, and have him seen to. He's badly hurt.
Mallow's great arm shoved him back. Don't interfere, Twer, or I'll have you out of the room. Your name, revered one. The missionary's hands clasped in sudden supplication.
As you are enlightened men, save me from the heathen.
The words tumbled out.
Save me from these brutes and darkened ones who raven after me and would afflict the galactic spirit with their crimes. I am Jord Parma of the Anacreonian worlds, educated at the Foundation itself, my children. I am a priest of the spirit, educated into all the mysteries, who have come here where the inner voice called me.
He was gasping.
I have suffered at the hands of the unenlightened. As you are children of the spirit, and in the name of that spirit, protect me from them.
A voice broke in upon them as the emergency alarm box clamored metallically.
Enemy units in sight. Instruction desired.
Every eye shot mechanically upward to the speaker. Mallow swore violently. He kicked open the reverse and yelled,
Maintain vigil, that is all,
and turned it off. He made his way to the thick drapes that rustled aside at a touch and stared grimly out. Enemy units. Several thousands of them in the persons of the individual members of a Corellian mob. The rolling rabble encompassed the port from extreme end to extreme end, and in the cold, hard light of magnesium flares the foremost straggled closer.
Tinter?
The trader never turned, but the back of his neck was red. Get the outer speaker working, and find out what they want. Ask if they have a representative of the law with them. Make no promises and no threats, or I'll kill you. Tinter turned and left. Mallow felt a rough hand on his shoulder, and he struck it aside. It was Twer. His voice was an angry hiss in his ear.
Mallow,
You're bound to hold on to this man. There's no way of maintaining decency and honor otherwise. He's of the Foundation, and after all, he is a priest. These savages outside. Do you hear me?
I hear you, Twer. Mello's voice was incisive. I've got more to do here than guard missionaries. I'll do, sir, what I please, and by Selden and all the galaxy, if you try to stop me, I'll tear out your stinking windpipe. Don't get in my way, Twer, or it will be the last of you. He turned and strode past. You, revered Parma, did you know that by convention no Foundation missionaries may enter the Corellian territory? The missionary was trembling.
I can go but where the Spirit leads, my son. If the Darkened Ones refuse enlightenment, is it not the greater sign of their need for it?
That's outside the question, revered one. You are here against the law of both Corell and the Foundation. I cannot, in law, protect you. The missionary's hands were raised again. His earlier bewilderment was gone. There was a raucous clamor of the ship's outer communication system in action, and the faint, undulating gabble of the angry horde in response. The sound made his eyes wild.
You hear them? Why do you talk of law to me, of a law made by men? There are higher laws. Was it not the galactic spirit that said, Thou shalt not stand idly by to the hurt of thy fellow man? And has he not said, Even as thou dealest with the humble and the defenseless, thus shalt thou be dealt with? Have you not guns? Have you not a ship? And behind you, is there not the Foundation? And above and all about you, is there not the Spirit that rules the universe? He paused for breath.
And then the great outer voice of the far star ceased, and Lieutenant Tinter was back, troubled. Speak, said Mallow shortly.
Sir, they demand the person of Jord Palma.
If not?
There are various threats, sir. It is difficult to make much out. There are so many, and they seem quite mad. There is someone who says he governs the district and has police powers, but he is quite evidently not his own master.
Master or not, shrugged Mallow, he is the law. Tell them that if this governor or policeman or whatever he is approaches the ship alone, he can have the revered Jord Palma. And there was suddenly a gun in his hand. He added, I don't know what insubordination is. I have never had any experience with it. But if there's anyone here who thinks he can teach me, I'd like to teach him my antidote in return. The gun swiveled slowly and rested on Twer. With an effort, the old trader's face untwisted and his hands unclenched and lowered. His breath was a harsh rasp in his nostrils. Tinter left, and in 5 minutes a puny figure detached itself from the crowd. It approached slowly and hesitantly, plainly drenched in fear and apprehension. Twice it turned back, and twice the patently obvious threats of the many-headed monster urged him on. All right, Mallow gestured with the hand blaster, which remained unsheathed. Grun and Upshur, take him out. The missionary screeched. He raised his arms and rigid fingers speared upward as the voluminous sleeves fell away to reveal the thin, veined arms. There was a momentary, tiny flash of light that came and went in a breath. Mallow blinked and gestured again contemptuously. The missionary's voice poured out as he struggled in the twofold grasp.
Cursed be the traitor who abandons his fellow man to evil and to death. Deafened be the ears that are deaf to the pleadings of the helpless. Blind be the eyes that are blind to innocence. Blackened forever be the soul that consorts with blackness.
Twer clamped his hands tightly over his ears. Mallow flipped his blaster and put it away. Disperse, he said evenly, to respective stations. Maintain full vigil for 6 hours after dispersion of crowd. Double stations for 48 hours thereafter. Further instructions at that time. Twer, come with me. They were alone in Mallow's private quarters. Mallow indicated a chair, and Twer sat down. His stocky figure looked shrunken. Mallow stared him down sardonically. Twer, he said, I'm disappointed. Your 3 years in politics seem to have gotten you out of trader habits. Remember, I may be a Democrat back at the Foundation, but there's nothing short of tyranny that can run my ship the way I want it run. I never had to pull a blaster on my men before, and I wouldn't have had to now if you hadn't gone out of line. Twer, you have no official position, but you're here on my invitation, and I'll extend you every courtesy, in private. However, from now on, in the presence of my officers or men, I'm Sir and not Mallow. And when I give an order, you'll jump faster than a third-class recruit just for luck, or I'll have you ironed in the sub-level even faster, understand? The party leader swallowed dryly. He said reluctantly, My apologies. Accepted. Will you shake? Twer's limp fingers were swallowed in Mallow's huge palm. Twer said, My motives were good. It's difficult to send a man out to be lynched. That wobbly-kneed governor, or whatever he was, can't save him. It's murder. I can't help that. Frankly, the incident smelled too bad. Didn't you notice? Notice what? This spaceport is deep in the middle of a sleepy, far section. Suddenly a missionary escapes. Where from?
He comes here. Coincidence? A huge crowd gathers. From where? The nearest city of any size must be at least 100 miles away, but they arrive in half an hour. How?
How? Echoed Twer.
Well, what if the missionary were brought here and released as bait? Our friend, revered Parma, was considerably confused. He seemed at no time to be in complete possession of his wits.
Hard usage, murmured Twer bitterly.
Maybe. And maybe the idea was to have us go all chivalrous and gallant into a stupid defense of the man. He was here against the laws of Corell and the Foundation. If I withhold him, it is an act of war against Corell, and the Foundation would have no legal right to defend us.
That's pretty far-fetched.
The speaker blared and forestalled Mallow's answer.
Sir, official communication received.
Submit immediately. The gleaming cylinder arrived in its slot with a click. Mallow opened it and shook out the silver impregnated sheet it held. He rubbed it appreciatively between thumb and finger and said, Teleported direct from the capital, Commodore's own stationery. He read it in a glance and laughed shortly.
So my idea was far-fetched, was it?
He tossed it to Twer and added, Half an hour after we hand back the missionary, we finally get a very polite invitation to the Commodore's august presence, after 7 days of previous waiting. I think we passed a test. 5. Commodore Asper was a man of the people, by self-acclamation. His remaining back fringe of gray hair drooped limply to his shoulders, his shirt needed laundering, and he spoke with a snuffle.
There's no ostentation here, Trader Mallow, he said. No fall show. In me you see merely the first citizen of the state. That's what Condor means, and that's the only title I have.
He seemed inordinately pleased with it all.
In fact, I consider that fact one of the strongest bonds between Corell and your nation. I understand you people enjoy the Republican blessings we do.
Exactly, Commodore, said Mallow gravely, taking mental exception to the comparison, an argument which I consider strongly in favor of continued peace and friendship between our governments.
Peace? Ah.
The Commodore's sparse gray beard twitched to the sentimental grimaces of his face.
I don't think there is anyone in the periphery who has so next to his heart the ideal of peace as I have. I can truthfully say that, since I succeeded my illustrious father to the leadership of the state, the reign of peace has never been broken. Perhaps I shouldn't say it, he coughed gently, but I have been told that my people, my fellow citizens rather, know me as Asper the Well-Beloved.
Mallow's eyes wandered over the well-kept garden. Perhaps the tall men and the strangely designed but openly vicious weapons they carried just happened to be lurking in odd corners as a precaution against himself. That would be understandable. But the lofty steel-girdered walls that circled the place had quite obviously been recently strengthened. An unfitting occupation for such a well-beloved Asper. He said, It is fortunate that I have you to deal with, then, Commodore. The despots and monarchs of surrounding worlds, which haven't the benefit of enlightened administration, often lack the qualities that would make a ruler well-beloved. This book is continued on cassette number 6, side 1.